This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans? Or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a trip down memory lane as we visit with this year's Big Easy Classical Arts Lifetime Achievement Award winner, a trip to the North Shore, where an internationally acclaimed dance troupe is gearing up for an energetic performance in Hammond, or a sit-in with students as they audition for local jazz artists. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Classical music, opera, and dance take center stage as the 20th annual Big Easy Tribute to the Classical Arts gets underway this week. Special recognition is given to performers and supporters of the classical arts, and a highlight of the event is the Lifetime Achievement Award. This year, that special honor goes to pianist, Tulane music professor, Masno artistic director, and founder of the New Orleans Piano Institute, Dr. Daniel Wildbacker. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Diane. It was quite an honor and quite a surprise. It just came out of the blue.
It is awesome to be recognized by your peers for doing something that you love, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It's been a chance for me to really sort of look back over the time that I've, well, my lifetime. That's what it is about, a lifetime achievement.
Yeah.
And it's a strange kind of award, you know, because you think, well, life, you have more to achieve still. But it's very interesting just at this point in my life to take stock and look at all the people that have helped me get to where I am right now and to achieve whatever I have achieved right now.
Yeah. So take us back in time. When did your passion for music begin?
I was fortunate to have a passion for music from a very early age. Growing up with a family of many cousins, my grandmother played the piano and many cousins played the piano. I myself didn't start playing until I was around 12, which is fairly late. But every Sunday evening at the Wildbacker grandparents' home on Esplanade Avenue, all the families would gather. You know, my father was one of nine children, so there were many, many grandchildren. And while the adults were doing what adults do and talk about in one part of the house, all the grandkids would play the piano. They'd play duets for hand, and my grandmother would play with them sometime. But it was every week we would do this. And I was just fascinated with how my cousins were able to look at the notes on the page and be able to make this wonderful music. And eventually I started cutting grass for my grandmother, and after I cut the grass, she'd take me over to the piano, and she was the one who gave me my first instruction. But even before I took piano, I remember having a fascination with music. My parents were given a gift of a 45 RPM record player and a set of Glenn Miller recordings, and I had an LP, 12-inch, my favorite piece. It was called April in Portugal. That I loved, I adored this music, and I would listen to it just all the time and dance to it.
And just the piano, was that your first instrument of choice?
Oh, yes. I had a cousin. Our family shared a duplex on Paris Avenue, and she was quite a good pianist. And when she graduated from Ursuline in her senior year, at that time, Ursuline would hire the New Orleans Symphony at that time to come play a concert at Ursuline, and their best pianist would play with the symphony at Ursuline Academy on State Street. And I drove with Pamela, my cousin, and her mother to the concert. And on the way home, Pamela said that the conductor, who at the time was James Jestad, had recommended that she go to college in Lafayette to study with a man called Edgar Davis. Well, this was astonishing to me. It was the first time that it occurred to me that I realized that you, in fact, could study music in college. I was a year behind Pamela, and so at any rate, I said right then and there, I'm going to college. I'm going to come up to USL, which it was at the time, and take music and study music. So that was a real turning point in my life. It was a real eye-opener. I was the first one in my immediate family to go to university. So the fact that I could do music there was a real thrill.
Wow, so you went to Lafayette.
Yeah. Then I followed the academic path, of course, and I went to Tulane for my first year of graduate school and ended up going back to finish my graduate work at USL. And then I was in London at the Royal Academy of Music for 2 years, which was a real eye-opener in education. It was fabulous. And when I came back, I went to Lafayette, and I helped to establish in Lafayette something called the Fine Arts Foundation.
You have performed concerts across the country, but you have returned to New Orleans, and you have given back so much to younger generations of aspiring musicians.
Well, I thank you for saying that. Yes.
And you went on to become the executive director of the Musical Arts Society of New Orleans. Masno, how did that happen?
Well, Masno started off as the New Orleans Institute for the Performing Arts in 1980. Pianist Melvin Alford started it with Julianne Nice, who had just finished her MBA at Tulane. In the late 80s, Madeline Tribble in Lafayette and Raymond Gitz here from New Orleans decided to add the International Piano Competition as a component of what had been going on since 1980. Every summer they had a week-long keyboard festival where they had masterclasses and recitals and lectures. And so the Tribbles in Lafayette and Raymond, a lot of people in Lafayette were very involved with Melvin Alford and Julie Nice. And in 94, I think it was, Alfred had to step down, and I was asked if I would be interested in becoming executive artistic director, which I accepted. And here I am today. If I had not, I would not be getting this award, I feel, I'm pretty sure. So that's how it sort of fell into my lap in 94, to sort of lead this organization and to carry it on. And we've had pretty good success, I think. This summer we'll be celebrating our 25th International Piano Competition.
You also went on to found the New Orleans Piano Institute. Tell me about that.
That's part of the competition. And this is what I'm proudest of. When I stepped in 94 as Masno's executive artistic director, the competition was going. And at that time I said, well, we need to have an educational component. I think it was in 99 that we actually started the first institute. We have around 30 students from local, regional, national, international that assemble here in New Orleans for the week of the competition, the end of July. They take lessons during the week. They appear in master classes. They attend lectures. But the key thing in my mind, they go to every competition event during the evening. That's the education. So I'm so proud that that has taken off under Sharon Horton's wonderful management and direction. That's the thing I'm proudest of, yes, definitely. But it's part of what Masno is about.
And you continue to teach today. You're still on the teaching staff
Tulane? I'm a professor of practice at Newcomb Department of Music at Tulane. I've been there since the mid-80s and teach theory and harmony and piano, of course. And I run the Music at Midday series every Wednesday at noon, which I'm very proud of.
What is it that makes you want to give back to aspiring musicians?
It's important to share this love and passion for the musical arts with all those who are interested.
You're doing it in the town where you grew up?
Right, absolutely, yeah. And this is another thing. I mean, New Orleans is a music city. And one of the things that's great about Masno and its connection with the city is that it's one of the things that really puts New Orleans on the map for the pianists, the community of pianists, internationally. And I'm very, very proud about that. So it just continues this great tradition of the city as always having been a center of music and sending important things out into the world of music globally.
So what's next for Dan Weilbacher?
After I get over all the basking and all the award ceremonies and people's congratulations, which have been very, very warmly and very much appreciated. I'm really hoping to get back to playing more, returning at some point maybe to a public stage. So I'm looking forward to that very much right now.
Well, Dan, congratulations again.
Thanks, Diane.
Pianist Dan Weilbacher is this year's winner of the Big Easy Classical Arts Lifetime Achievement Award. The 20th annual tribute to the Classical Arts Luncheon takes place Friday, February 14th at the Hotel Monteleone, 214 Royal Street, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Produced by the Big Easy Entertainment Awards to benefit the Foundation for Entertainment Development and Education. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The internationally acclaimed Philadelphia-based Koresh Dance Company brings its passion for movement to the North Shore with a performance this weekend at Southeastern Louisiana University's Columbia Theater for the Performing Arts. Joining me by phone now is Artistic Director Ronnie Koresh. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
High energy is what comes to mind when one thinks about the Koresh Dance Company. Tell me, what will you bring to our area with your latest work?
Our current touring program, which is called Bolero and Other Works, it will actually have Ravel's Bolero. It will have Moonlight Sonata as well. It's going to have Air on a String by Bach and other wonderful, wonderful works that include world music from Turkey, from Israel, pretty much a very diverse program, lots of comedy, and really very eclectic program.
Is there a blend of dance styles on the program?
Yes, the movement is very versatile. So you're going to get to see from the earthy movement to a very elegant and ethereal movement to almost, I would say, urban movement.
Tell us about your background and how your passion for dance and movement was developed.
Well, I was born in Israel, and when I grew up in Israel, Israel was very, very small and, you know, almost undeveloped. I was in its baby steps. So dance was a very big part of the culture because there was no TV, there was none of those things. So culturally, people got together a lot and celebrated a lot through dance. My passion, I suppose that it's part of my culture. The passion might be in my gene to some degree. I grew up in the Yemenite tradition, so my family comes from Yemen, and in Yemen there's wonderful, wonderful tradition of dance. And in Israel there's a wonderful tradition of dance. I never really tried to figure out why I was so in love with dancing. I think it's such a pure form because it requires your body, just you, becoming the art form that it is.
I understand that your mom was a folk dancer. Did she have an influence on dance in your life?
When I used to watch my mom dance and see her eyes when she danced and the joy that she has in her eyes when she does it, you get that feeling that, you know, if maybe if I do that too, I'll get that same feeling inside that I detect in her eyes.
So when did you move to the United States, and when did you form the Koresh Dance Company?
I moved to the United States in 1983. That was after 3 years serving in the Israeli military, which is mandatory. I started dancing a lot earlier. I started dancing when I was 12, 13. But I've always wanted to study. I studied with the Bat Sheva Dance Company. I was in the second company because I was also in the Israeli military. I couldn't be in the first company even if I wanted to. But I've always wanted to study with the great Alvin Ailey. So originally the idea was to come and study for 6 months to a year with Alvin Ailey. And so I came, I was 21. I came to New York and I started studying in the Alvin Ailey School. And from there, you know, it was quite difficult to leave because you realize there's so much to learn, so much. And I fell in love with, you know, with the environment. And I just got offers to work in different companies. And so I decided to stay for a little longer and a little longer and a little longer. And then I was offered a job at University of the Arts. So I joined in as a faculty. And then in 1989, 90, something like that, I decided to form a company. Because I've always wanted to create a place for dancers to be able to make a living. And for some reason, I believe that I could do it. I believe that I could actually create a place where people can make a living doing, you know, their art and doing what they love to do most. And of course, it took a long time.
Yeah.
It took about 7 years before I was able to pay anybody anything. I had to start a school a year later. When we formed the company, we didn't have a school. And then my brother Alon, who's my executive director today, said, you know, let's start a school, and then it might be income to survive. So we opened the school as well in 1991. And here we are today.
Wow.
Thriving big school in Philadelphia and a company that's touring a lot and with a wonderful repertoire.
In this particular tour, in the works that you're performing, is there a central theme that you're exploring in these works?
My primary objective with this work is really investigating the human spirit, really the core of humanity, in a sense, kind of what makes us human. I think there's a lot of things to do with relationships and community. And to some degree, celebrate the differences between us.
And how do you hope to connect with audiences in Louisiana?
And, my work is not abstract. It's not, it's not avant-garde. It's real. It's genuine. It's real. And it's very connecting to people. So I'm excited to, have a really incredible relationship with Louisiana. Keep coming back and forth. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I hope you have a grand time in Hammond. Looking forward to seeing you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Me too.
Ronnie Koresh, Artistic Director of the Koresh Dance Company, which will perform Sunday, February 16th in Hammond at Southeastern Louisiana University's Columbia Theater for the Performing Arts. More info at columbiatheater.org. The New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and Foundation recently held auditions for its free music school called the Don Moose Jameson Heritage School of Music. The program offers high-level music instruction for students ages 10 to 17. Students meet on Saturday mornings and learn from prominent local jazz musicians. Producer Mallory Falk brings us these voices from the audition.
My name is Kayla Rito, and I'm 14 years old. I've been singing since I was young, but not actually trained. I just always loved the way my voice sounded. I hope that doesn't sound arrogant. My teacher at school ended up showing me an email that was saying you could try out for the Jazz and Heritage, so I was like, okay. I prepared Stevie Nicks' Dreams. I've never liked the big voices. I've always liked a voice that had more emotion and soul in it, and that's what I get from her songs. So it's like, you're awesome, Stevie Nicks.
Now here you go again, you say you want your freedom. Well, who am I to keep you down? Well, it's only me who wants to wrap around your dreams.
I'm in acting class, and that's awesome, getting my Leonardo DiCaprio on. But I always liked singing. I always felt like I could portray my emotions better when I sing, and I could just lose myself in the moment.
Remembering what you had, and what you lost, and what you had.
My name is Justice Keller, and I'm 17 years old. I'm classically trained in cello, and I want to try something different. I can find myself in playing and lose myself at the same time. It explains me, like in the pieces that we play, and it makes me feel more in tune with the world.
Music education, it's not in every school like we would like to think. The first thing they usually cut funding-wise is music. I am Kia Robinson Hatfield, and I am the Programs Marketing and Communications Coordinator for the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and Foundation. programs like this need to exist to promote our culture, to promote education in music. And by making it free, we're allowing people who don't have money for private lessons, we're giving them a way to get that education.
My name is Micah Dugas. Tried different sports and I didn't like them, so I'm like, I'm gonna try to play the piano. It just brings you to life and makes me happy.
Lynn Dugas.
And Ronnie Dugas. We traveled about 80 miles from Baton Rouge or Denham Springs, Louisiana.
Neither of us play, so to have him and the music in our home just come so freely is just such a gift. You know, they always say if you just learn one additional thing and have an opportunity to be exposed to something, it changes your path in life. So we just want the best for him in hopes that he gains what he needs and wants out of this.
My favorite thing is seeing the kids come in excited for auditions, anticipating getting in, then watching them grow in the program. It's really exciting to see that, how they start and then how they end up and where they go off into the world.
Students go off into the world to play at festivals like Jazz Fest and venues like Snug Harbor. To learn more about the Don Moose Jamison Heritage School of Music, go to WWNO.org. And we have something extra in our Lagniappe Corner. Save the date, as five of New Orleans' most innovative jazz artists, guitarist Steve Masakowski, drummer Johnny Vinakovich, bassist Roland Guerin, pianist Mike Esnault, and saxophonist Tony DeGrotti will reunite for the second annual All-Star Jam, a jazz underground concert celebrating the historic jam session tradition of New York City's mid-century jazz scene. It takes place Thursday, February 20th in Satchmo's in the Dana Student Center at Loyola University. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.